All right, everybody, welcome to the Weekend Interview Show on Radio. Our first guest today is Brendan Corner. He is a Markell Fellow at the New America Foundation, former senior editor of U.S. News and World Report. He is, best I can tell, a freelance writer for many different magazines, mostly on the left. And what caught my attention is an article from over a year ago now, the September, October 2002 Mother Jones cover article, "The Security Industrial Complex, Corporate America is Lining Up to Profit from Homeland Defense, the Largest Government Spending Program Since the Cold War." So I saw that article and thought that I have to get this guy on the air, and so I have. Welcome to the show, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, I guess I'll ask you first, what made you decide that this was a subject that you really wanted to delve into and find out about?
It was something that, as the war on terror was picking up kind of in the spring of 2002, started thinking a lot more about what kind of lobbying messages you were seeing. Lots of conferences and expos popping up here and there, lobbyist firms inside the Beltway, repurposing themselves to basically work for software companies and technology companies that want to take advantage of the war on terror. And it got me started, you know, I got thinking, you know, are these products the government will be buying, is this the result, is because these products will actually help with the war on terror, or because they've been kind of spun pretty well by lobbyists in D.C.? So it got me thinking more about the larger issues of, yeah, we have this huge budget, but it was $38 billion at the time. It's much higher right now, this huge budget, but what kind of oversight or what kind of thought are we putting into how we're fighting the war on terror because of what we're procuring?
And then the answer to that is not the one you were hoping to find, I suppose.
Well, I think that there's a lot of rhetoric about the free market. You know, basically the best product, best contract proposal will win out. But what I found out in my reporting is that's not really the case, is that so much of this is bound up in Beltway politics, D.C. politics, you know, one hand washes the other kind of lobbying, that I think that ultimately we're wasting a lot of money or misdirecting lots of money on things that aren't going to help us ultimately in the end.
So really the contracts are going more to cronies than the companies that really have the best product.
Well, certainly early on in the game you saw that. You saw when they were trying to step up airport security, there was a huge, massive, multi-billion dollar outlay for x-ray machines. It just so happens that the company that is providing most of the x-ray machines to American airports now hired its chief lobbyist, Linda Daschle, who is Tom Daschle's wife and is a very well-known Beltway lobbyist. So there's been real no vetting of whether their product, L3's product, is actually better than anybody else's. All we have is the company's data on that. I think there's a knee-jerk reaction to say, well, we have to do something. We have to appear that we're doing something as quickly as possible. Here's a company that has very close ties to someone close to Congress. Let's just hand this to them without much thought given to how to actually impact airport security.
Right, yeah. I wonder about the bomb-sniffing equipment. I guess that's probably one of the biggest contracts, right? Is there a few different companies making that for the airports? Or?
Yeah, surprisingly few. Actually, there's a certification program, and at the time I wrote the article, there were only two companies certified to even make these. So I'm not sure there has been a third one certified, but I think it's basically a two-horse race, but the certification procedures are kind of opaque and hard to understand and not really transparent. So it's very hard to know if there's any actual scientific data backing up whether these things work well. We certainly don't know much about any bomb materials they may have found in the process of being out in the field already. That's something that has been very, very hard to get real data on that. Certainly some of the some other types of security products, certainly biometrics products is one that's been talked about quite a bit, have been shown, at least in the deployments they've been used in airports and test runs, have not worked very well.
You know, it occurred to me, I was thinking about prison life. I was watching a thing on TV about some guys in prison, and it occurred to me that, you know, prison is the total security state. There's guards everywhere. There's total prohibitions about weapons and drugs and that kind of thing. It's in a small, enclosed environment. and nothing gets in or out that's not allowed in or out, and yet somehow there's more violence and drugs and stuff like that in prisons than anywhere, total state notwithstanding. So I wonder whether any of the security is going to do any good or not.
Well, that brings up an interesting point. The reason there's so much violence and drug trade inside prisons is because of the corruption factor. You basically have, you know, the companies or bureaus of prisons that run these facilities, you know, often have just looked the other way on these things, don't care, you have people on the take, and you basically have a reluctance to go in and put people at risk. So there's definitely a human factor involved in that. And of course there's a huge human factor involved in airport security. I think it's gotten a little bit better now that they've taken, you know, the Transportation Security Administration has taken airport screeners and put them under the federal watch, but still at the same time, you know, what kind of training do people have? You know, you put your bags through and you see someone looking at a little screen. You know, not experts. They're people who basically have limited training. We're not even sure that we know how to train these people. If, you know, even we found someone who's a quote-unquote expert on these matters, it's really unclear at this point the effectiveness, especially when you have such a well-financed enemy like Al-Qaeda with so many resources at their disposal. How easy will it be to circumvent these measures, you know, circumvent that human factor? It's really not known at this point, but it's a scary question nonetheless.
Well, and they've done a few tests where they have FBI agents and Secret Service guys and stuff like that try to smuggle in guns and knives just to see if they can do it, and they always have no problem.
Yeah, they always have. I'm not sure the exact failure rates on that, but it's significant when they do those tests. Those are a pretty regular thing. I think they do an annual battery of tests on trying to smuggle pretty blatant firearms, things of that nature. So, yeah, so it, obviously the system's broke. And, you know, after 9/11, I think the solution that was bandied about Congress so much was, well, there's technological fixes out there. We can take out this human factor and use, you know, better X-ray machines, biometric devices, people talking about national ID cards, things of that nature. And I understand the sentiment. Certainly, especially politicians wanted to look like they were getting tough on this issue. But I think in the rush to do that, there was really not much vetting of the actual technology that was being deployed and giving these huge contracts.
And speaking of the national ID, that brings up Oracle and Larry Ellison now. Right after September 11th, he came out and said that, don't look at me as being greedy. I'm not being greedy. I'll give you all the technology you need to create a national ID system. Right?
Yeah.
Did he say donate it all to the government for free?
Yeah, what he was basically proposing was what's called the razor system in economics. You know, you go to the store and you buy a razor. And it costs you, they're actually taking a loss, a bath on selling you that razor. What they sell it to you costs less than what it costs to make it, manufacture, you know, sign it, manufacture it, and advertise it. But they make it up on the actual selling the razors you have to snap in there because you have to change them every couple of days. It was the same thing, I think, with Ellison's proposal regarding the national ID. He's basically going to donate equipment, but then sell services, sell the database services, sell the management services. So it certainly was not a completely altruistic offer on his part by any means.
Oh, well, I surely didn't confuse it with altruism. It scared the hell out of me. I thought the national ID card was something that Americans have rejected consistently for 100 years.
Well, it is, and I think that's why you're not seeing talk about that right now. In the initial months following 9/11, you certainly saw congressional hearings on national ID system. That's where Ellison testified, as well as some other software magnates from California. But I think the talk about it is subsidized because, as you point out, there's a huge wariness among Americans about a national ID system. Certainly after, you know, the Cold War, what was one of the greatest images we had of the Cold War was someone in the Soviet Union having to show their papers and this kind of micromanagement, civil liberties in the Soviet bloc, that really became synonymous with our image of the East. So I think that you're going to have a very tough time convincing Americans to change their minds on that, at least until that image fades. It's going to take quite a while.
You wrote in your article that there were 23,000 different proposals to the FAA, and that was a year ago, so I'm sure that there's been a lot more than that. Now, the FAA couldn't possibly need 23,000 new kinds of security.
Yeah, I mean, they can't, and that's the problem with so many proposals is that there's no way you can possibly vet all of them. There's no way you can take each one and give it, you know, the due diligence they deserve in terms of determining how effective these things might be if they're deployed. That's why ultimately it comes down to not a runoff between, well, this technology is better than this one. They're just too overwhelmed. Instead, it becomes, well, this technology may be better than this one, but we're never going to find out. Let's just give it to the person we know already, or the person that has a lobbyist who has influence on Capitol Hill. I think the problem is there's been no system set up to take these technologies, you know, actually give them some kind of scientific research to these, apply the scientific method and see if they will actually work. I think the best example, as I brought up before, is biometrics and facial recognition cameras. This is something that in the months after 9/11 became a very hot topic. You saw the stocks of these biometrics companies skyrocket because, you know, they're getting these things in test runs at airports and here in New York, the Statue of Liberty. But I think that it took a while for people to realize these things don't work in the slightest. And in fact, in one test, I think they did it in Logan Airport in Boston, they actually worked as they were designed to less than half the time. So there's certainly a mania or an interest in kind of propping up or overhyping these technologies that sound great when you first hear them, but when they're deployed, it's quite a different thing.
Well, and that's an interesting point, too, about the failure rate on the facial recognition. I wonder, you know, if it had a failure rate of half of 1% of the time it screwed up, would that be any better?
Well, there's a very famous security analyst named Bruce Schneier. He runs Counterfeit Internet Security. And he wrote a brilliant article in his cryptography newsletter about this. He said, look, even if we're talking about a 1% failure rate, you're talking about tens of thousands of people every day who will be stopped, have to be interrogated, frisked, have to have, you know, their baggage gone through with a fine-tooth comb. Basically, air travel as we know it would grind to a halt. No one would want to fly, and that would have terrible repercussions for our economy. So it's just not a viable system, especially if you're talking about error rates in the 50% range. There's no way it can possibly work.
Well, and it sort of amounts to an unreasonable search, even on the people who the computer checks them out as not matching and they're free to go about their day. I mean, they're still... Is that any different than a cop walking up and demanding to see your ID without cause?
There are similarities to it, certainly. It depends on which way they would gear the database. I think the plan was that they would have a database of known terrorists and would basically passively scan you with these things. It's the same thing with I've written also about gate surveillance, gate recognition technology with DARPA, which DARPA is working on. The same kind of thing, basically taking the whole and trying to match it up against a database of people who are red flagged.
And you know, gate recognition, you mean the way they walk.
Right, and whether that amounts to a Fourth Amendment violation, that's really something that has yet to be decided, certainly hasn't come up in a legal case yet. But, you know, I think that would be something that if someone was inappropriately fingered because of this kind of technology or just out of a civil liberties lawsuit against this, it's something that a court may have to decide whether this does, tread on the Fourth Amendment.
Let me ask you about Tom Ridge. Does it look like he's trying to do his job right, or he's just basically going along with the whole mess? Or
yeah, I actually met Tom Ridge briefly. I was at a conference that he spoke at. My take on him is that he certainly is a great devotee, at least in his words, of the free market approach. He basically gave this speech and he said, look, the government doesn't have the best technologies to fight terrorism. We're behind the curve. We need to look to industry and basically make a competitive environment for these contracts so people end up with the best technology available. I mean, basically very straightforward laissez-faire kind of free market thinking. It probably makes sense. But he has, I don't think he has any idea about the scientific process and the research process involved in perfecting and developing these technologies. I think that that's not what he's trained to do. I mean, he's basically a career politician. He's not someone from a scientific or technological background. So I think he is not really familiar with the vetting process, with the design review process, and with the testing process that's necessary to make sure we're not throwing billions of dollars away on technology that won't make us any safer. So I think that the smart thing for him to do now would be to delegate authority to someone with more experience in that field, but I think that right now that's not a top priority for him.
Right. Well, and I gotta say that, government giving out a contract, that ain't quite the laissez-faire approach to it. The real free market approach to it would be to get the government out of the security business altogether. And, like, for example, at the airports, if they hadn't nationalized it and they let the private airlines do the best they can, find the best contract they can for bomb sniffing equipment or whatever it is, then...
Yeah, but there's one thing you're missing here. An airline is in business to make money and will choose the cheapest contract. They will not choose the best technology. Okay, the important thing here is safety, not getting the cheapest security screening possible. That's why in this situation, I think it was a good move, because first of all, you have this multi-billion dollar budget the airlines don't have. The government, theoretically at least, as an extension of the people, should be interested in passenger safety, where I think a more paramount concern for the airlines is going to be getting the cheapest technology possible. You saw that prior to 9/11. Where you saw the training and the people that were manning the security stations were woefully unprepared, completely untrained. And the reason for that is because they were paying them minimum wage. So in a situation like that where you have someone interested, paramount interest is purely in saving money, you're going to wind up with technology that absolutely doesn't work.
Well, but if they chose the least technology or the cheapest technology, not necessarily the best one, then that would really leave them open to financial loss for lawsuits and stuff if they had settled for the cheapest one.
But they're open for lawsuits anyway. I mean, the thing is, the airlines were sued after 9/11. And if enough something else happened again, the airlines would be sued yet again. In the cost-benefit analysis, it's much cheaper for them not to spend the money on everyday security. Look, how many planes get hijacked every decade? That's their calculation. Obviously, it's going to be a bigger risk now, but the calculation, it's the same thing as product recalls for, a car company. They basically say, look, people may be dying because of the defect in this car, but if the cost of the lawsuits to us is going to be less than the cost of the recall, we just don't care. So I think that's the mentality you saw with airlines prior to 9/11.
Well, but the thing is, if the contractors who are doing the contract for the government, they want to make money too and do it at the cheapest that they can. It's just that they have a captive market, whereas if they were just being hired by an airline or something, at least there's a competition there.
They have a captive market, but that's my point. You want the Department of Homeland Security to select for cost to be one consideration, but not the only consideration. I think that there's much more hell to pay. There's much more of a higher political price if basically it turns out, DHS is just selecting the bargain basement technology here. I mean, that's not the problem. The problem is they're willing to spend money. I just think they're spending money on things without giving enough thought to what they're spending money on. I think they're basically don't realize that politics and technology aren't the same game.
Right. Well, and I kind of expect that that's the way it's going to be whenever government enters the market and makes contracts for whatever, that they're always going to do it like that because it's tax money they're spending. It's not like they have to work for it and earn it before they reinvest it in something else.
Yeah, I think in this situation, it's just a matter of expertise. You basically have politicians declaring themselves overnight experts in technology, and that's certainly not the case. And the other thing you have to keep in mind, in the field of technology, the government is way behind because they just simply don't offer enough perks for the best and the brightest to become involved. If you are a very, very sharp software engineer, are you going to go to work for a private company for $200,000 a year or start off as like a G4 in the government? It's a no-brainer.
True. Well, I know you're short on time and you're in the middle of work on other things here, so I want to throw this quote here. This is Larry Ellison from Oracle talking about the national ID. You quoted him in your article saying, "The privacy you talk about is an illusion. All you have to give up is your illusions, not your privacy."
Right. Yeah, I mean, the thing about Ellison, I don't know if your listeners are aware, but Oracle actually started the CIA project, and Ellison is basically an ex-spook. And so I think he's coming at this from a very, very different point of view than the majority of Americans, at least I hope.
Well, yeah, and that kind of scares me to think that maybe his point of view is the point of view of a guy who, being in the CIA, knows what all our government files look like, knows that we don't have any privacy to lose right now.
That's sort of the background he's coming from. That's what he was involved with. He was involved with making databases for the CIA. So it's a scary thought for sure. I agree with you on that one.
Right on. Well, hey, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today, Brendan.
Thanks a million for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. Brendan Kowerner, he's a Markell Fellow at the New America Foundation, former senior editor of U.S. News and World Report. It was great to have you on.
Thanks so much.